and welcome to the Partners in Fincrime podcast in association with FSCom. My name is Evan McGugan and I'm a senior manager in the Fincrime team here.
I'm Chris Vaughan and I'm a manager in the financial crime team.
In this podcast series, we'll be looking to discuss all things anti-financial crime.
We'll be deep diving into cutting-edge stories as well as other interesting topics in the financial crime space.
In this episode, we discuss the recent downfall of SVB, Signature Bank and Credit Suisse. We discuss what this means for audits, for auditors, for auditees. We discuss what this might mean for the crypto industry. And then lastly, to stay on topic, we discuss ChipMixer, which was recently shut down by US and EU authorities. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Hi, Evan. Yeah, doing well. How's things?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, not too bad. I guess once again we find ourselves recording a podcast a month or so after the previous, and once again there's been an incredible amount of action over that past month. I don't think we've reached that point in time where we're considering ourselves to be on the precipice of a 2008 style financial crisis, but I think, you know, we've sort of seen the mainstream news even sort of very clearly covering the issues that large credit institutions, banks, are encountering at the moment. At the point in time of us recording, we've seen Silicon Valley Bank, which those in the industry are all very familiar with, big supporters of fintech, venture capital, private equity, a lot of disruptors being sort of exposed to that. That collapsed, I think it was probably a few weeks ago now at the point of recording. We also saw like a Signature Bank go down. Credit Suisse has obviously merged with UBS when it was encountering some issues, and Deutsche Bank as well seems to be teetering on the precipice to a certain extent at the minute. So a lot going on in that sphere. Some of it maybe not, well, a lot of it really not directly tied to financial crime concerns necessarily, but it does make you think as to what the knock-on effect may be for firms in the industry. What's your thoughts on all this, Chris? It's moving at a very fast pace. It's been a bit of a mad few weeks. I think you had some thoughts on audits that a few of these banks had underwent, financial, I guess, rather than financial crime, but the audits that they undertook prior to ultimately going down. What's your thoughts on that? I guess, do you want to jump in and have a bit of a discussion as to what this evolving situation means for the listener, means for the practitioner?
Yeah, absolutely. The audits point is an important one. It was picked up quite quickly, actually, after the Signature Bank and SVP situations. And these were two obviously quite big banks that went down within 2 weeks of having KPMG audits completed. And I suppose it's a really interesting sort of point, I suppose, to pull out, because these audits are, you know, as I'm sure you know, are really intended to give firms a bill of health and are relied on from a financial perspective, a regulatory perspective, from just an understanding of the firm's financial stability and resilience. And it's within 2 weeks is obviously very short space of time. You wouldn't have expected very much, if anything, to have changed at these firms, except obviously something massive did change. Now, does that call into question that the audits themselves, did something get missed? It's very difficult to know without being on the inside, I suppose. But nonetheless, I just think it's a really interesting sort of piece of news to have come out. And perhaps we can go back and forth on that one. The other thing that I wanted to touch on, I suppose, as a result of this, and this is typical for me, is to try to highlight the other side, which is the effect it's seemed to have had in the crypto space with a situation like this. And again, you know, as you've said there, Evan, maybe we're not looking at a 2008 situation. Maybe we are. It's very difficult to say and to comment on. But nonetheless, who do we trust as consumers? Who do we trust our money to? And that's the crypto project in its essence was designed to be able to remove third-party trust from the financial structure and from third parties who are entrusted with your money to look after it, basically, by building initially Bitcoin. And let's say not just from third party trust point of view with banks, but also from jurisdictions as well, from printing money with the 21 million cap within Bitcoin, which I can discuss perhaps in a bit more detail. But yeah, those are two big topics I think we can potentially look at. For me, the second one there is probably something we can go back and forth on in quite a bit of detail. But I wonder what you think about both of those. I mean, do you have thoughts there specifically?
Yeah, I guess on the auditors, it sort of reminds me of Wirecard too, and the heat that EY got for their involvement in the audits they undertook for Wirecard. When it comes to SVB and SVB in particular, I did a bit of reading on this, and obviously one of their main issues wasn't necessarily that, like some of the banks in 2008, their assets, their investments had essentially no value or limited value, and that's what took them down. The instance that the SVB found themselves in was essentially like the liquidity crisis or liquidity crunch, and they just couldn't, you know, essentially a run on the bank, for want of a better term. It's really key to sort of point out the fact that they were recently audited and given a clean bill of health, as you say. And then how did this end up two weeks after that? I don't really know what goes into a financial audit, best will in the world. I don't know if it was specifically looking at or looking for the instance that materialized in the end. So without that visibility, I would wonder, you know, it is a key point to make here, like the importance of a really well scoped out audit and ensuring that whatever reason you engage in a third party with to do an audit, be that financial crime, which obviously we do, or whatever the case may be, that it's very well scoped out and it's actually sort of put in place to provide assurance on the specific risk profile that you face, making sure it's well scoped out and ultimately covers all the bases that it needs to cover. So I guess that'd be number one. Obviously, the way we do audits is very well scoped out, ultimately based on the Barclays scope in the outset. And then we've obviously built on it, but we sort of make sure we cover all bases and test all components as you'd expect. So I guess that'll be number one. And maybe that's just a bit of a shot in the dark, because again, I don't know what goes into a financial audit, but if they weren't looking for this specific risk factor, which maybe they weren't because it happened, make sure the audit that you conduct is giving you the assurance that it needs and it's not missing any glaring gaps. But secondly as well, I guess it goes to show the importance not just of engaging third parties in audits. We do audits. Like I'm never going to go and say sort of denigrate that in any way, shape or form. Like an independent third party assurance is key to actually be able to evidence that your control framework is sufficient when it comes to FinCrime. But also, you know, an audit, at least when it comes to AML's point in time, an audit does give you that independent lens, but also make sure that your internal approach is sort of complements that. Make sure, I don't know, you have those three lines of defense. Presumably SVB and these other banks would have been somewhat aware of what may come out of it, rising interest rates and whatnot. So just make sure that you're not just relying on a clean bill of health from HSBC once a year, but actually go in and make sure that you're, you know, looking after these things in house. And to put it in AML terms, it's all about three lines of defense, and having your independent third party is like line three or 3.5. But also just make sure you're covering those points as well. I don't know what you think on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely agreed. I think it's interesting as well, and I've touched on crypto, and to keep banging the same drum, a lot of crypto firms were relying on these two banks specifically. In the case of SVB and Signature Bank, it was well known that they were servicing many crypto firms, and quite a lot came out in the wake of these collapses, either to say we have exposure to these or we don't, in whatever case it was. But, you know, with things like audits, you're relying on those statements and on those audits for the purposes of understanding whether your partner can be relied on in many cases. So yeah, I think it's a really big deal, and it's just an interesting sort of time, I suppose. Things are changing so quickly, and it is really tumultuous in this space at the moment. It was sort of a bittersweet, I suppose, for crypto, because while we saw two banks that were servicing crypto collapse, we also saw a bounce in crypto prices across the board, pretty much. Seems to have slipped a little bit now, to be perfectly honest, but a lot of speculators seemed to link the bounce in Bitcoin and other crypto assets prices to the collapse of centralized systems, which is something that I think the crypto industry have been waiting for a long time. In response to COVID, we saw all of the markets crash, including crypto, and people were hoping that crypto would be that refuge from the centralized markets that maybe we would see that everyone, the term is the decoupling, like everyone's hoping that crypto will decouple from fiat and become a safe reserve for your assets in a separate way to how fiat works, and we didn't see that in response to COVID, and many commentators were saying perhaps we'll see that now, perhaps that's what we're looking at. And with the recent slump again back from that spike, I'm not sure that we can never be sure what we're looking at from a market's perspective, let's be honest, but it's not clear certainly whether it is that decoupling. But nonetheless, I just think it's very interesting. I also think, you know, I think probably we're rambling off into things that we don't know enough about here away from financial crime, but nonetheless, I just think it's a really interesting general point because crypto was built to be this safe haven from centralized banking, and we're seeing the problems with centralized banking now, and perhaps the use cases for things like DeFi and all of these kinds of structures that are intended to remove trust, you know, trustless systems, let's say, perhaps we're seeing the use cases for them really prove themselves over time in a really clear and obvious use case. You know, everyone knows, or most people know, that crypto was created in response to the 2008 crash. It was directly because of it that it became such a big thing. Are we going to see the original use case for crypto come into its own in a similar way? Interesting times anyway. Any thoughts?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, and a really good point on not veering too far off our subject matter. I was just about to make reference to the price of gold in response to your reference on the increase in crypto prices on the back of this, and referencing the price of gold is not something I thought I'd be mentioning on this podcast. So there's that. But I mean, yeah, as you say, it'll be interesting to see what the wider sort of macro responses to this. I think we can all probably be quite happy that the Silicon Valley bank situation, particularly in the UK, didn't lead. I know certainly over the weekend where it was going on, knowing the exposure that UK fintech has to that bank, like it was potentially quite a concerning situation for a lot of would-be disruptors, a lot of incumbent fintech firms too. So it's good that it didn't lead to a systemically negative situation. And it'll be interesting to see if there is any wider ramifications to this. Maybe just a very quick point as well, though, to bring it back to fincrime firms, maybe just to be aware, I know everybody is, but just to be aware of the fact that criminals, fraudsters in particular, are always sort of, you know, well ready to take advantage of tumultuous situations, take advantage of, you know, where markets are in haywire and people are concerned, and prey on that vulnerability. So I'm pretty sure I saw one or two instances of, you know, your classic, you know, WhatsApp messages based on banks encountering problems, and press this link and then fill in your details and so on and so forth. So firms should probably be aware of any potential upticks in fraud where fraudsters try and take advantage of this. And so too as well, I think all the banks so far have ultimately led, you know, found themselves in a decent situation as far as things go from where it could have been. But if this leads to, for example, Credit Suisse, to take that example, being taken over by UBS, and then you know, anytime there's a merger, that may lead to, you know, client books being shredded to some extent and firms being offboarded and so forth. So firms should just be aware of any potential influx of maybe substandard clients that may come down the line. That's not directed at any bank, but just anytime this happens, you do sort of see the market get saturated somewhat in client relationships that maybe should have been exited before they were, and then they all flood the market and then try and get back on. So yeah, just to be aware of that, and to keep an eye on, as you do anyway, but keep an eye on your sales pipelines and such.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's all really valid points. What else have we got on the docket today, Evan?
I think the only other thing that we have on the docket is ChipMixer. ChipMixer essentially was, and you know this more than me, but essentially a mixer, as the name would suggest. US and European authorities essentially took them down in the middle of March and charged its operator, its mind and management, its ownership structure of essentially laundering some $3 billion of criminal proceeds, including $700 million worth of North Korean hackers' ill-gotten gains. Supposedly, it's been going since 2017, and I think since then it seems to have been connected to a large number of quite well-known hacks, quite well-known cryptocurrency related schemes. The Lazarus Group, obviously being the North Korean one, laundered a good bit of their funds through that, but also, you know, loads of hacks, loads of cryptocurrency laundering schemes and such used this. US prosecutors filed charges against a 49-year-old gentleman from Vietnam for allegedly operating it. And by all accounts, the ChipMixer itself has been shuttered to some extent. I mean, this we've sort of seen this a few times over the past few months now. Tornado Cash, one that was shuttered maybe 6 to 9 months ago. US law enforcement in particular seem to be cracking down on these, and quite rightly. Chris, you're obviously the crypto guy. If you were a VASP, or even not, but like, what do you think firms should be aware of? What do you think firms should be doing with respect to this bit of news? Anything in particular?
Yeah, I think everything you've said there is actually really, really useful and good to be aware of. I think you're right. It is a trend that we're seeing. The scrutiny now on mixers and their uses in laundering across the board is being looked at by law enforcement. And with the sanction of Tornado Cash and now ChipMixer getting closed down by the authorities, I think there was always a question over mixers, to be honest with you, and in terms of how firms would handle mixers. Do we consider them to be, well, what is the risk profile, I suppose, that's connected with a mixer? Because I suppose many people within the crypto space would argue that mixers were originally intended for privacy purposes and for enhancing privacy of asset control. So they could be used for, you know, potentially making it more difficult to understand when funds are moved throughout the blockchain. That's essentially what they do, is to mix up the funds with lots of other transactions and to make the audit trail much more difficult to trace on the blockchain. But it's just become the target and the crosshairs are really over mixers now. And I think it's really time that firms need to take another look at how they're handling this from a risk perspective. A few years ago, maybe you could argue that mixers were still had enough legitimate use cases, and maybe we need to start rethinking that now as an industry and start thinking, well, let's look at the examples. Do mixers still have that legitimate use case, and how often are mixers being used legitimately compared to how often they're misused for laundering purposes? If you're me seeing it from my perspective, I think there's an argument still for legitimate uses of mixers, but I just think it's been so abused that it almost feels like the potential benefits are not outweighing the incredible negatives here. And so as you said there, Evan, I think what can firms think about reviewing their assessment, reviewing their transaction monitoring systems and blockchain exposure detection methods, let's say, you should really have a position and understand why you're either accepting or not accepting, or have a threshold, for example, to exposures of these kinds. And mixers are one that I think really firms need to have another look at. What do you think?
Yeah, agreed. I think maybe back in the day, and you sort of referenced it at the start of this discussion around the small banking crisis at the moment, but there is legitimate use cases on the individual level, and that's quite right. But stripping it back and looking at it more systemically as a compliance officer and a compliance department, it's you can't really look at it on the individual level, and it's I would say probably very hard to mitigate the risk where you've got a decent sort of threshold of exposure has been breached to, well, not just a specifically mentioned mixer, but indeed any. So yeah, one to be aware of, one to make sure you understand your risk exposure, you understand and make sure that your TM system is detecting these things. And if not, you might want to take a look at it and make sure that it is. You mentioned thresholds. A lot of these, you know, Chainalysis, Elliptic, so on and so forth, allow for a certain degree of threshold to be flagged. Maybe this is a question you're not able to answer, but is there a reasonable threshold that should be set at? It's obviously going to vary, you know, from a firm-to-firm basis and what your client base does, your transactional profile and so on. But what have you seen work well? Is there a good threshold by which that should be set?
It's a really good question. Yeah, it's a really good question. There isn't one correct answer. It really depends on the products and services offered by the firm. Sometimes it depends on the level of due diligence that's being applied to your client. It can depend on the capabilities of your blockchain monitoring system and how that's actually been set up. I think that's incredibly important to consider, actually, is many firms will have blockchain monitoring systems in place. But before you even put in a blockchain monitoring system, you really should be understanding it from a technical perspective in terms of its limitations and what it can do for you. And then you should be comparing that to others within the market. If you do decide that blockchain monitoring is the right way to go, there should be an assessment done, let's say, of how that's going to be used and how you're going to target. You know, how are you going to analyze your exposure and understand how you're going to use the systems? I think it's very, very important to understand how they work, what they can tell you and how they can support you. And then from there, yeah, you need to obviously come up with tolerances that should be tested rigorously. You should understand why you're making decisions. But generally, I mean, we don't need to say it, but risk-based approach. Yeah, and again, there isn't one right answer because it really depends on a number of different factors. But it's a case of just having that expertise, I suppose, and applying in the calibration of these systems.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. Your point on the levels of due diligence too. Like, obviously, crypto can be perceived to be a bit of a boogeyman, but you know, consider a cash intensive business or remittance firm or something like that solely or predominantly takes in cash. You want to make sure you have the right systems to manage that. There's no right or wrong answer to how much cash you should take or in what, you know, avenue you should take cash. If you're doing your CDD, if you had good systems and controls and so on and so forth. It's always an interesting one anyway, where law enforcement sort of crack down on someone. And yeah, hopefully it's going to be a good trigger point for people to have a think about their control framework in any case.
Definitely, yeah. And another one, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on this podcast before, but not just having systems to detect, but also potentially to prevent forward onward movement of cryptocurrency is very important. So if you're able to actually freeze the funds instead of just having them move through accounts very rapidly, that I think that's also really important to consider. So things to think about, I think, at a time like this when there's, you know, we're really seeing that the authorities put a lens over mixers. It's time to have another look at your internal systems. Yep. Great stuff. So look, I think we've covered some good ground there. I mean, there's so much to discuss at the moment. It feels like you can't touch everything, but you know, I think there's a lot of talking points out of that. Maybe we've raised more questions than we've actually answered there, but nonetheless, I think it's an interesting one, and we'll keep monitoring the situation, particularly with the sort of the banking topic that we've covered there. There's never going to be there's never going to be clear and right answers. Only retrospectively are we going to be able to see the impacts of this. But yeah, good to discuss and get your thoughts about that.
Absolutely. Agreed. Great job. Well, as ever, lovely to speak to you and jump on our soapboxes once more. I think that probably just about does it, as you say. So I wish you a very, very happy remainder of the working week. Like, next time we may have a special guest join us, but that will be to be confirmed, I think.
Sounds great. Well, I look forward to it. Great to speak to you again, Evan, and let's catch up soon.
Super. Good night, Chris.
Bye, everyone.